This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Three, and we are rolling along this morning. Big news out of the NFL. Two big news. Well, one we kind of knew was going to happen. Tom Brady announcing his retirement officially yesterday. But then also Brian Flores and his suit against the National Football League. Dan Lust is going to join us. He's a sports attorney. We're going to talk about this lawsuit in which his name, three teams were named in it. The Dolphins, the Giants, and the Denver Broncos. He is shining light on the practices, hiring practices of the National Football League. It is very complex. The lawsuit doesn't look like it could be winnable, but you never know. There might be enough evidence that he's got that we don't know about that can prove that there is some shenanigans going on in the way these teams are hiring their head coaches. And the big argument about the Rooney Rule is going to still be in play. And listen, I get both sides of it. The Rooney Rule acts as a way for minority candidates to get interviews, to showcase their skills, to showcase how they can get, you know, they can have these jobs. But it also means that teams have to just kind of go through the motion, even if they have somebody else in mind for the job. And it is sort of a waste of time. Brian Flores did not like feeling like he was a waste of time for the New York Giants this year. He didn't like it when he went through the Broncos a couple of years ago before he got his head coaching job with the Dolphins. Yes, are there success stories through the Rooney Rule? Sure. But at the same time, it is a rule just to sort of say, well, we are interviewing people, but they're not hiring minority candidates for head coaching jobs. And this has been a problem with this league for a long time. Yes, it boils down to owners saying, look, it's my team. I own it. It's important to win. That's how you make it in this business. You have to win games. And we feel like the people that we hire, regardless of race, regardless of color, we feel like these are the individuals that help us win. But when time and time again, minority candidates are not getting hired, and Brian Flores is pointing it out, he is a head coach, a successful head coach, and he is losing out to assistant coaches getting their first head coaching job, and he cannot get hired. He has been interviewed a number of times and is still not being offered a job. He should have been gobbled up the second he was available, and he's not. I wonder how far this can go, and I'm interested in what an attorney is going to be able to explain to us in terms of how difficult this lawsuit may be. Well, we got that for you coming up. It is hour three as we're rolling along on Sports Map Radio.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
A couple of news breaking this morning. Commanders is now the new name of the Washington franchise. So you can go with that as any way you want. Maybe you like it, maybe you don't like it, but now it's going to be the Washington Commanders going forward. You know what I will say? I will say that the 2 years without a nickname does allow sort of a buffer of time so that you can call them the Commanders. It's like, remember we struggled with, we would say Washington Redskins, and they're like, oh, they're not the Redskins anymore. They're the football team. Whoops. Well, that's been a time. That's 2 years between the two, and Commanders should be more easy to remember because they haven't been the Redskins in a while now. So it's not like going from one to the other. But Cleveland Indians are now the Cleveland Guardians, and this is the way teams are changing their names right now. Is it the most splashiest name? Not really, but I don't know. I mean, it's basic, and I think that's what they were looking for. They didn't go with Red Tails. They didn't go with Red Hogs. They didn't do any of that. They went with Commanders. They went with something basic. The Brian Flores lawsuit is what we're going to be talking about a lot this morning, and it's a big one. It is a really big deal. Flores is alleging three things in his lawsuit against three teams that are kind of a big deal, and some are bigger than the others. John Elway and the Denver Broncos interviewed him in 2019. He was scheduled to meet with them. John Elway, Joe Ellis. Flores said that they came in disheveled. It was obvious that they had been drinking the night before. I don't know how you prove that, but that's what Flores said. They did meet with them. The Broncos said, we met with them for 3.5 hours, so it wasn't just a ploy to fill out the Rooney Rule. We were really interested in them. I mean, he came from the Patriots. I mean, it's not like he was coming out of nowhere. I mean, a lot of people are interested in Patriot head coaches for head coaching positions. We saw it time and time again. So it's not unrealistic for the Broncos to come right back and say, yeah, of course we were interested in him. He worked with Bill Belichick. We were very interested in him. But he ended up with the Dolphins. There's a report that Stephen Ross offered him $100,000 to lose games in 2019 to secure a higher draft pick. That's the direction the team wanted to go. If that is true, it's not only a criminal offense based on fraud, it is also a way to remove Stephen Ross from an owner of that group. And that has to come from the other owners. And I've said this many times. I think the one problem that we have with when owners go bad is there's no one to hold them accountable other than the other owners. Anytime an owner is fined, it is because the other owners have agreed to fine that individual. It's not because Roger Goodell or anybody else, any other commissioner in any other league, is stepping up and doing it on their own. It is because that particular individual, they have the permission from the other owners to act in that capacity. The owners govern each other. They use one individual as sort of the spokesperson for that decision, but they govern each other. It was, remember Donald Sterling when he was being let go? It had to come from the other NBA owners. It didn't come from Adam Silver. Adam Silver couldn't make the decision to take property away from somebody like that. He had to come from the other owners. The owners had to say, we don't want you in the club anymore. And you agreed when you joined this club that it could be taken away from you based on our discretion. Now, here's the thing. Mark Cuban had famously said, I have to be very cautious here because we don't want a slippery slope, but we're just kicking people out of this league for whatever reason. Like, it has to be really good. And in Don Sterling's case, it was really good. But he was a little worried about, well, like, if I get pulled over for a DUI, can I have the team taken away from me? If I get accused of something nefarious in one of my other businesses, but I'm fighting it, can I have it taken away from me because it's a bad look? Like, what constitutes this? Like, what would make this that you could just come and take a team away from me, something I own that's worth upwards to $1 billion to $2 billion to $600 million, whatever it may be valued at, you're just going to come and take it, and I got to sell it, and I maybe don't want to sell it. And in this case, Stephen Ross can be removed from the league if the other owners feel like he cheated the system of play in the National Football League. Should an owner ask a coach to lose games on purpose? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. When you are talking about a league that is in bed with gambling sites, when you have sponsors, when you have fans that buy tickets in good faith, the thinking that they are going to see the team put out the best effort it possibly could to win a game given what they have on the field, that there's no extra incentive to lose a game on purpose. I mean, think about a family that buys a ticket for the first time. Their kids are going to a Dolphins game, and they've never been to a Dolphins game before. And Stephen Ross is actively trying to get the coach to call plays and so that they would lose on purpose. Like, what kind of a look is that for the league? Think about the teams that are fighting the opponents of the Dolphins for places in the standings, for a wild card spot, whatever it may be, and the Dolphins are purposely losing games. If that's true, that is a removable offense. The Dolphins also could be, again, it could be criminal based on, based on fraud of the general public. I mean, it's a really serious accusation that Flores is making, and he better be able to back that up. Because, again, that's a damaging statement. Now, if you believe Flores in general, because Flores seems like a guy that knows his reputation is on the line and wouldn't want to lie about these particular things, that's a bold thing to lie about, right? I mean, I think there's some merit to that? I'm more likely to believe Brian Flores. If I don't have any evidence either way, I'm more likely to buy Brian Flores' story, because it did seem like the Dolphins wanted the number one pick. They did seem like they were, at the time, tanking for Tua because they didn't really know how good Joe Burrow was going to be. We all kind of didn't, but Tua was kind of the guy, and they ended up with Tua, but I'm sure they would have taken Joe Burrow with the number one pick like anybody else who had the number one pick, right? We didn't know Joe Burrow's greatness until later in the season of 2019, simultaneously as the league was playing its games. But at the same time, the Denver Broncos story is a little interesting too. The Broncos probably are the one organization that could prove, without just taking their word for it, that they did take the interview seriously. That's the one organization that if they're in court and it's their turn to state their case, they can say, all right, we have evidence from the hotel logs that we booked a conference room at this hotel in Providence, Rhode Island from X to Y, from A to B. And we were there for 3.5 hours. And we'll have employees testify that we were in there for 3.5 hours. We had lunch, or we had a meal delivered, or we had a break, whatever it may be, that they came in and they cleaned the room, they provided refreshments, whatever it was, until we left at this particular time. And, oh, by the way, Your Honor, here's all the notes that we took while we were in that meeting with Brian Flores. So we did take it seriously. Now, again, the counter argument would be, well, you were still interviewing him for a show to check off a box, and you made sure that nobody could doubt you by taking all these notes. Now you're getting into something a little bit more slippery, right? Now you're starting to really dig into intent, right? It's like when, you know, you say, well, I said I was sorry, and then somebody goes, well, you're not really sorry. I'm like, well, how sorry do you think I am, right? Like, you can play those kind of games, but in a court, if the Broncos can show we were in there for 3.5 hours, that's as long as we do with any interview that we've had. Doesn't matter if the candidate is white or black or whoever, we always spend this amount of time or around this amount of time with every single candidate that we're seriously considering. We've got pages and pages of notes from the interview. What more do you want? That might be enough in a court of law to go, yeah, well, the Broncos are off the hook here. And to be honest with you, even if John Elway and Joe Ellis looked disheveled and had been drinking the night before, that's not against the law, and there's nothing wrong with that. If they indeed conducted a thorough interview hungover, they still conducted a thorough interview. I think his biggest case is against the Dolphins. Because, again, this is a guy that was let go by the Dolphins because he didn't get along with Stephen Ross and he didn't get along with Chris Greer, the general manager. That is what we're seeing here. That there was just a communication problem between the three, and two of the three get to stay and one is let go. And when that was a very shocking firing, and yet he is yet to land on his feet. Now, the Giants one is interesting because, as we've been talking about this morning, this Rooney Rule, whether you think it's effective or not, Brian Flores, I don't think, feels like he is a kind of candidate that should be used as a minority interview checkbox. Right, he is a head coach in the National Football League. You're going to interview Brian Daboll, an assistant that's never been a head coach, and you're going to give him a job before you even interview me, and you then interview me and say, just to check off a box, I'm a head coach. All right, we got a couple of cuts here from Brian Flores. Here's Brian Flores talking and saying it is much bigger than me.
Well, I understand the risk. Look, I love coaching football. I'm called to coach football. I'm gifted to coach football. And I still want to coach. Let's be clear about that. But this is bigger than coaching. This is bigger than me. The numbers speak for themselves as far as the hiring, firing, and the lack of opportunities for minority and black head coaches and executives in the National Football League. And we need to change. We need things to change.
He's 100% right. The fact that Mike Tomlin right now is the only black coach in the National Football League is crazy. It is crazy. But has Flores sacrificed a career coaching? He likely has. This lawsuit will probably keep him out of the league. He'll probably keep him out of the league. Because, again, think about this. Who can tell another owner to hire him? Like, can Jerry Jones pick up the phone and call anybody, Gail Benson, of the Saints and go, you got to hire Brian Flores. It's a bad look for the league if we don't hire him, so hire him. Well, she could go, well, Jerry, why don't you hire him? Like, why don't you fire Mike McCarthy and you hire him?
Nobody likes McCarthy anyways.
Right, exactly. But, like, nobody can do that, right? Like, no owner is going to force another owner to do something. It's got to come internally. It's got to come from an owner going, you know what, screw this lawsuit. I don't care. The guy's a winner. The guy, everybody plays hard for him, and I could use a guy like that here. Like, if you're the Houston Texans, think about how he changes the culture just like that, right? Just arriving. By the way, here's Flores and his turn to step up.
Like I mentioned before, this isn't about me. And I understand that. This is bigger than me. This is bigger than football. Many have come before and done a lot to create change in this country. For people of color, and I just felt like in this instance, it was my turn to step up and be an agent for change, and I'm proud to do that.
By the way, this is on CNN this morning. Brian Flores speaking and doing the media rounds. You were saying he's really been bouncing around.
He was on CNN this morning. He was on CBS's morning show. After that, he will be on Get Up.
Oh, yeah.
He's in about 5 minutes or so.
He's doing the rounds.
Yeah. Which I thought was kind of fast.
Think he'll be on the NFL Network?
That might be the only one he does miss.
He's going to be on Good Morning Football this morning.
If he was to be on the NFL Network, is Goodell firing a bunch of people?
Sure. Yeah, it might be.
Are the owners going, Goodell, we can't have that. That's our network.
Exactly. Here's Flores again doing it for the kids and coaches.
My kids. That was a big part of this. You know, I have two sons. They're 8 and 7. I've got a 5-year-old daughter. You know, when I look at them, I don't want them to go through some of the things I've had to go through. And I know that was the same for people who came before me as well. They were thinking about me, even though I wasn't, I wasn't here yet. But that was a big thing. And then I just think of all the coaches that, you know, even on my staff, I thought about guys on my staff or my previous staff in Miami who I know are more than capable, who are gifted to coach in this league, to lead. I just want them to have the opportunity to stand in front of an owner and have a real opportunity to get one of those jobs and lead a team.
Again, Brian Flores on CNN this morning. We'll talk more about this, and then Dan Lester is going to join us, sports attorney, on the sort of this lawsuit, the issues behind it, what's the burden of proof, all of the legal issues surrounding this as he goes after the National Football League. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue in his wake-up call. We'll get more into the Brian Flores situation with Dan Lust, a sports attorney. He's going to join us in 10 minutes. Oh, I'm having fun on my Facebook page, Ron, talking about the Commanders.
Commanders.
All right, here was my post, okay? I said, we have a league that has two teams named after pirates, one named after steelworkers, meat packers, minutemen, tall people, Texas residents, Nordic explorers, gold miners, godly individuals, cattle rustlers, and even a head coach. So Commanders really isn't a bad name, is it? By the way, my Amber Alert is going off on my phone right now. That's always a bad sign in my area, nevertheless. So then I said, so Commanders really isn't a bad name, is it? And then my friend said, those names generally had strong ties to the city or region rather than this generic USFL garbage. Well, I agree with him. I think the name is kind of weak, but like Commanders for Washington doesn't sound, it's not completely disconnected, right? It's not like calling a team the Tigers, right? Or like, I don't know.
The Manatees,
right? Like Commanders with the Pentagon and all that. There's a connection there.
Well, yeah, the commander in chief does live there.
Yeah, exactly.
Just kind of throw that one out there.
I'm going to write that. The commander in chief lives there.
Yeah. What I'm afraid of, and this is where I don't know if they've thought this whole thing through, is like all the nicknames. Like we've already talked about Commies. Do we say, you know, that these guys might go Commando?
Commando sounds fine. Yeah, you're right.
At
That's
some
true.
Point, I mean, I don't know if you want that for your football team.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I think it's not fun. It's not Kraken. Kraken is so good.
Kraken was perfect.
I cannot get over Kraken. I mean,
you know, listen, hey, we blasted the Golden Knights.
Yeah.
When they came out with that name, we're like, well, that's safe, and it's dumb.
Safe and dumb. Right?
You know, you should have had a tie-in. I thought, you know, like, you know, the Aces or something like that. That would have been a great tie-in for Vegas.
Right.
You know, Seattle Kraken, I don't know why, it just fits.
It fits. It's like
it gives you
beast, water monster.
Yeah.
In Seattle, the fishermen are out there getting the crab legs, and the Kraken can come out of nowhere at any minute. It sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great name. Commanders is just, it's basic. I think that's the problem.
At the same time, I think it's a perfect name for the capital of the nation.
Yeah. I mean, the commander-in-chief lives there. You got generals and commanders.
Yeah.
You know,
everyone walking around
you're
there.
Good. Yeah, exactly. So, I just, I mean, let's, I think for people, I think this is what it boils down to, right? You had 2 years to come up with something, and this is what you came up with, right? Like, in the end, this is what you did. This is the best you could get.
But, okay, but in the end, were we going to ridicule this no matter what? Is there a name out there that we would have been like, oh,
of
God.
Course. You know what? That's another point to my friend. Let's be flat out honest. This is because people don't like Dan Snyder. Right?
Yeah.
Dan Snyder, it's Dan Snyder's team. They lose. They haven't won in forever. No matter what they picked, it would have been ripped apart. It would have been ripped apart because it's a franchise people don't genuinely like. This is a guy where there were thousands and thousands of emails uncovered in an investigation that somehow got away scot-free. When people were like, no way was John Gruden the only one.
That was so far. That's all we're looking at. That's all we care about. We're hoping that maybe all this other stuff will make that white noise. 600,000 emails and only Gruden.
Only Gruden. So, again, it's an organization people don't genuinely – it's an owner, I should say. It's an owner that people genuinely don't like. And, they haven't won a Super Bowl in forever, since 92, right? So they haven't won. They don't go to the playoffs often. When they do, they're usually a quick out. And I think this is easy. It's easy to pick on them.
Yeah, and honestly, I really don't know what other name they could have come up with. I mean, were they going to come up with, like, the Washington Potomacs?
Well, and that's the other thing, too. I think somebody bought all the names that seemed reasonable. Somebody got a hold of those early and grabbed all the websites. And you don't want to be like, well, how much do you want for the website? $7 billion. Okay, how about we not give you that? Like, where's the happy medium? You want 10 grand? You want 50 grand? What do you want? 7 million. Okay, no. How about 1 million? You don't want to play that game with these people. So you find something you can control, that you can own. So, I don't know. I'll tell you a quick story. When I first got into minor league basketball, I was with the Las Vegas franchise of the International Basketball League, which was a new league that was forming. And I got in on the ground floor, and I was really excited because it was kind of new, and we were putting together broadcasting with television and radio, and we had all sorts of great broadcasting plans. I worked with Tim Neverett, who's the voice of the Dodgers now, one of the voices of the Dodgers, used to be one of the voices of the Red Sox. And him and I, we worked in media and broadcasting, and we had a good time. And I remember we had a Name That Team contest at the very, very beginning of the early stages of putting the franchise together. I was naive, and I was young. I was probably 27, I think, at the time. I was young. I was naive. I thought that was a real thing. I thought that was a real contest. I thought people submitted entries and that people sat around in a conference room and went, oh, Joanna Garcia from Henderson, she thinks we should be called the Silver Foxes. All right, that's a good one, right? Let's put that over here in this pile. This one says we should be the High Rollers. That kind of stinks. Let's put that in the dump pot. You know, like, I thought they did that. No, they didn't do that. They had their name. They knew who they wanted to be at the very beginning of the whole thing. They had the logo and everything. They needed one person they kind of hinted to somebody to say that, and then they won the contest. Now, I'm not saying that happens all the time, but there was too much at stake to be giving it to somebody to just randomly choose. No, they knew it. They knew what they were doing. They made it fun for the fans, but they knew where they were going. And I wonder how long, with that in mind, I wonder how long they knew they were going to be the Commanders. How long were they sitting on it? Right? How long, like, was it a year ago? Was it this year? Was it 15 minutes after they said football team, but they wanted to give it plenty of time to breathe a little bit? I mean, who knows? But, you know. You think that there would be, you're right, you'd think that there would be more interest. This is your one chance, right? I mean, is Houston Texans a cool name? Yeah, it's kind of a cool name. Is it basic? Yeah. It's named after the residents of the state of Texas. But it kind of flows. There's an image there. You know, it's kind of Tennessee Titans. There's no Titans in Tennessee. Well, Vince Gill, he's a Titan. But that's about it. But it rolls. It flows. It has a... You feel... Commanders? I don't think it rolls as well. All right, back to the Brian Flores lawsuit. What's up with that legally? We'll talk to Dan Lust about that next as we continue. Oh.
listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go back out to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Dan Luss joins us, sports attorney, to talk about the Brian Flores lawsuit against the National Football League. How are you, Dan?
I'm good. Busy day, and obviously a very important lawsuit that everyone is talking about.
Yeah, let's get to the crux of it. In terms of the lawsuit, he has made some claims against these organizations, but in the end, what's the legal position that he's standing on?
I mean, I guess at its heart, right, there's three causes of action to this lawsuit. They're all based in some form of racial discrimination under federal law, New York State law, New York City law. So I'm sure we'll get into it. There's a lot of noise in this complaint, a lot of, you know, lightning rod allegations, specifically, you know, with respect to Stephen Ross offering a $100,000 bribe per loss. Again, that's in the complaint. I'm not sure how much that has to do with, you know, claims of racial discrimination, but yet it's in there in the complaint. So, yeah, it's tough to kind of weed out the noise versus where, you know, Flores is going to win and lose his case.
In terms of the claims that he is making about the Denver Broncos disheveled and drinking the night before, these seem like things that are just added on. Do they matter in a case like this? Like, it's not against the law to be disheveled and drinking the night before, as long as you'd conduct the interview in a fair and equitable manner. If the Broncos claim they did that, it doesn't seem like it would be a big deal what the state was of Joe Ellis and John Elway. Is that more noise, or is there value to that in the lawsuit?
I mean, here's the thing, right? And Flores is going to have this on a couple levels. And really, any coach that didn't get a job, you can't just show that you didn't get the job and you have to be of a different skin tone than someone else. You have to show that the decision-making was based on some type of illicit discriminatory purpose. And that could be age-based discrimination, race-based discrimination. But just because, right, someone shows up late to an interview, as is alleged that the Broncos did back in 2019, and, you know, Flores says that it was clear that they were out, you know, coming back from a night of drinking. Just because they were unprepared for an interview doesn't mean it was a sham interview and they never had an intention of hiring an African-American coach. I think that's a pretty big leap. Not to say that somebody can't establish that, but that's why you have lawsuits. And people say, why does this lawsuit take 3-4 years to get to court? That's because of those 3 years in the middle, right? Sometimes it takes longer than that to conduct discovery, to go through emails, text messages, have depositions of people like John Elway, right, to get to the heart, get to what those people were thinking at that particular time. Again, just because, kind of numbers speak for themselves, I think it's an interesting point that Flores raises. We have one, you know, African-American head coach. We have six general managers in football that are African-American. Those numbers are not good. They probably help Flores' case. But it's going to take a lot, right, a lot of discovery on a case-by-case basis to show that the reason those numbers are disproportionate is because of some improper illegal activity that's occurring. And that's going to take a lot of time. It's not going to be in one text message or one late meeting by Elway and co.
Yeah, and in the Broncos situation, if they can show that they had the room at the hotel for 3.5 hours and show notes from the interview, is that all they would need, or would they need some other way to prove intent?
I mean, you can't just show, hey, here's, you know, I wanted the job and I didn't get it is because it was some type of racial undertones. You need to show what went through that process. And at the end of the day, which I think is kind of being lost, this is not a 50-50 as to who's, you know, who's going to win. Brian Flores has to prove, you know, what's called beyond a preponderance of the evidence. He has the burden of proof here. So he has to show that this was done with some type of, you know, racial intent. If he can't show it and he can't find anything, emails, texts, right, and they, you know, say that there's no racial-based, you know, activity at depositions, what does Brian Flores have for his case? That's why, you know, I imagine some of your listeners are watching. Brian Flores is on CBS this morning and said that he doesn't really know one way or the other if the Giants acted with some type of a racial, you know, undertones, but that he's hoping to make that out over the course of his case. So, you know, it's a long road for Flores. Certainly, I don't think he's shown anything that's open and shut case as of today.
I can get the sort of far-reaching implications of this. It's shedding light on the hiring practices of the league and the things that he has been saying is the reason he's doing this. But in the end, if we're talking about damages or what he's actually wanting out of this lawsuit, do we know what he wants out of this lawsuit?
No, it's twofold. Obviously, when you file a complaint, a civil complaint like this, you're looking for money. That's why one would do this, or you're looking to maybe change the practices of a particular business. His complaint obviously seeks some form of monetary recovery, and it also seeks what's called an injunction. That's to stop some type of, the policies and practices of the NFL is how it's worded. So, if you're just reading Flores' comments and what he's now said on various, programs, he's talking about uncovering, racial injustice in the NFL, and that it's about time, it's long overdue. So it looks like he wants to send a message, right? And then in my mind, and I'm sure, your listeners, it goes to the Colin Kaepernick situation. That lawsuit was sent to send a message, right? It was sent to try to change the NFL at a fundamental level. I think that's what Flores is doing, and I think it's not lost on anyone, right? The guy is still interviewing for head coaching jobs with, the Texans and the Saints. So the guy still wants to be in the NFL. It's such a peculiar circumstance. We just don't normally have someone interviewing for a job while simultaneously suing them. It's just it's very odd.
Dan Luss joins a sports attorney on the Brian Flores situation here on Sports Map Radio. I'm really curious about the accusations that he made against Stephen Ross, offered $100,000 per loss. If there is evidence, some email, some way he can prove that, how much legal trouble, I guess it would be the right word, is Stephen Ross in? This would be fraud. This would be going against every sponsor, season ticket holder, anybody that you had, if you can prove that they actively tried to manipulate losing a game.
I mean, that's the thing here, right? So I guess I'll preface this with, I don't think that if there are receipts that Stephen Ross, paid or offered or made, had some type of check with Flores' name on it, if this comes up, it doesn't win or lose the lawsuit, right? So people have asked, that's the big thing about this lawsuit. I'm like, well, it's the big thing, but it's not really relevant to the lawsuit itself, at least in my opinion. Now, be that as it may, the NFL, if they haven't already, they will launch an investigation into these allegations. They might come up with nothing, but they might come up with something, right? But that something is in a territory that we don't really ever get to in sports. Names like the Chicago Black Sox or even Pete Rose, like those names come to mind, which are kind of hallowed grounds in sports. You don't want to be in the same sentence. The point shaving scandal at Boston College, those are really troublesome areas. And now the NFL finds themselves squarely kind of fighting two battles, an integrity battle, right? And also this kind of battle on the racial kind of optics. So I think, honestly, the Stephen Ross one, that could be just as problematic as the underlying merits of this case, whether or not you have a racial problem in terms of hiring and firing. I think both are equally bad. I think we can't lose sight of that.
I get that every case is different. I completely understand that. And in some cases, we're not talking apples and oranges. We're talking apples and elephants. But in these kind of cases, discriminatory cases, in general, Dan, are they easy to prove? Are they difficult to prove? Is the answer somewhere in the middle? Like, is this a very big hill for Brian Flores to be climbing here?
I mean, you'd have to think, right? It's going to be... Put it this way. Again, it's Flores' burden of proof. He has to show that there was some type of, improper racial activity that occurred. Just put it this way. I don't know if I think that Brian Flores has the best case here. You just go to the Giants scenario. Brian Daboll is coming off of a fantastic performance offensively against the Patriots and then the Chiefs. And he's going head-to-head with Brian Flores in an interview. I don't think there was a hotter coaching candidate on the market than Brian Daboll. I don't know. If either got the job, I wouldn't be shocked. But the fact that Daboll got it and not Flores, right, it's not someone that was completely unqualified. So the fact that, here Flores didn't get the job, it's a kind of tough sell that he didn't get it because of some, racial reason one way or the other. And then vice versa, right? The Giants are saying that Flores was in consideration until the 11th hour of the case, that they weren't checking a box, that they were considering Flores, and it was seemingly a two-horse race between Flores and Daboll. What is there to say that that's not true? Flores has had a tremendous track record with the Patriots and then the Dolphins and was kind of a shocking fire. So Flores' success is going to kind of work against him with respect to the Giants. Like, of course the Giants were considering, having him in, and it wouldn't be a shock to anybody if the Giants had hired Flores because he's a great head coach. So I think it's going to be an uphill battle for Flores. But that said, this case is a class action lawsuit, right? Jim Caldwell, we're bringing in people from years past. Those guys might actually have the stronger case here, but we'll see which, plaintiffs elect to join this case. We could have a number of big head coaches that choose to join, former general managers, people that tried to get head coaching jobs that weren't interviewed. So, this is just really the tip of the iceberg here.
This next question, I'm talking way out of my ballpark here. So I'm trying to figure out if you have owners and the commissioner works for the owners and the owners don't have a boss and there's no overriding person that can dictate how the league is run. It's a collective. Is this something that the government can get involved in? Is there a antitrust thing or something that's probably way out of my ballpark here that the government can step in and say, we are going to be looking into this, guys. And now you'll have to answer to us on these hiring practices.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, don't go any further than what's going on with the Washington football team, right? Congress is getting involved in the, gender discrimination or we'll say, sexual harassment issues in the NFL workplace. It's not that far of a stretch to say that the Congress is the next thing on the agenda is racial hirings and firings and employment practices in the NFL. Congress just did it, right? And I think there's actually a hearing, I think a roundtable scheduled on the Washington football team front, I think tomorrow. So, yeah, the NFL, they've done it before, and obviously baseball had the whole steroids hearings not so long ago. So, yeah, certainly within the realm of possibility.
Dan, I love it. I love learning new stuff. Thank you so much for your insight onto this and your expertise. Really appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Thank you. And it's Dan Luss, sports attorney on our Progressive guest line, Progressive Quote, Buy, and Save on Home Insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer only at Progressive.com. All right, we'll come back, wrap up the hour. Some interesting thoughts to dissect as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Dance to a Dan Lust, attorney. I like talking to attorneys because I'm not one. Does that make sense? I like when I can get some legal answers to things. I always like there's some of my favorite guests, like Amy Dash when she's come on before. Like some of them, the legal world is so different than the sports world, because the sports world, we think like, oh, well, that's going to be a problem and that's going to be an issue. But in the legal world, they're like, no, it actually isn't against the law for this, this, or this, but it is against the law for this, that, and that. Right. And so you have to sort of, put it in a lot of, kind of context. And I like when lawyers are able to do that. It's, that was really interesting to me. And I'd be interested to see if the government does want to step in on this. I don't know. I know that there's a political argument if you want your government doing things like that or not.
But we
had the steroid hearings, and I remember people going, this is a waste of time.
Deflategate.
Like, maybe not really. Deflategate.
Deflategate almost went to the Supreme Court.
Now, anytime Congress gets involved in sports, we're like, don't they have better things to do?
Well, I mean,
but this is important.
Like he said at the very end there, I mean, they're investigating Washington, or they're looking into their team in the backyard with gender issues, gender equality in the workplace.
Yeah, we're not talking about deflating a football. We're talking about hiring minorities and getting a fair shake in the hiring world.
And why wouldn't they go to racial discrimination?
Exactly. Of course.
They're doing gender now or ageism or whatever it might be.
I'm going to be fascinated when that happens. Hey, coming up this weekend, former world champion Keith Thurman and Mario Berrios will be colliding in a high-stakes welterweight showdown. And the co-main event hits just as hard at the four-division champion Leo Santa Cruz returning to take on Keenan Carbajal. Saturday, that's this Saturday, February 5th at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, live from the Michelob Ultra Arena in Las Vegas, and you catch it on pay-per-view. Buy now on the Fox Sports app and watch on any single screen that you want. Again, headlined by former unified welterweight champion Keith Thurman, taking on former super lightweight champion Mario Berrios. The co-main event, four-time division world champion Leo Santa Cruz returning to take on Keenan Carbajal at a 10-round showdown. Again, Fox Sports app, and watch it on any screen you want. All right, I don't know where the Brian Flores situation is going. I think it seems like that's one of the reasons I asked him. Like, in the end, like, when you file a lawsuit, you want something, right? What does he want? He wants, obviously, attention to the issue. He wants a national discussion on the issue. Those are all great. But in the end, monetary damages have to be in the suit. I don't know if he gets any of that. And I do think that this is a suit that's going to be hard to prove. It doesn't mean we won't have a conversation about it. And it doesn't mean that we won't have more teams looking more closely at the way they conduct interviews with minority candidates and the way they evaluate candidates for the job. that might actually take place, and it may take this lawsuit and the attention that it is getting and the fact that he's on every single television network that he can get on to highlight this as probably the byproduct out of it. But to prove the Denver Broncos didn't take it seriously, to prove that the Giants did something wrong, to prove the Dolphins, the Dolphins hired him, right? The Dolphins, fired him, but they also hired him. So he's got to prove that there's something racial discriminatory about that. I think it's really, really hard. I think he's highlighting some things to get the attention and get the conversation going. And that's a good thing. I think it's an important thing, but I don't think he wins this case. I don't think he wins this suit. I think in the end, he's going to win the larger picture. And that larger picture is teams are going to be like, hey, what exactly? How is this working? And if I'm an owner, too, I might talk to my staff and go, hey, guys, I put you guys in charge of this. Remember, a lot of owners, they don't make money. They didn't make money in the football business, right? Some of them didn't. Most of them made money doing something else, right? And they're in the football business, and then they got people in charge of football things. Oh, sure, there's the Hunt family and all of that, and the Maras and the Rooney's been in the game a very, very, very long time. But there are other owners who made money in oil, made money in shipping, made money in whatever it is that they made their money in, and they trust football people to make football decisions, and they may go, hey, I've been a hands-off owner, and now I want to be more hands-on. I want to discuss this with you guys. How exactly are you evaluating every candidate that comes through here, including the minority candidates that you are interviewing? What exactly is happening? And let's talk about it. And maybe that conversation starts up. And if that's the case, Flores does win the battle, even if he loses this civil suit war. All right, we'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back for Throwback Thursday. Enjoy the rest of your day. It's Sports Map Radio.